What we've been doing is we kind of start every sermon with a reading of it, and you've been getting the same translation. So I'm going to give you something different this morning. This is a pretty good paraphrase, a little looser than I would like it to be, but hear it, and we'll start thinking about this bread stuff. So Matthew 6, our Father in heaven, reveal who you are. Set the world right, do what's best, as above, so below. Keep us alive with 3 square meals. I don't know if that's his point. Keep us forgiven with you and forgiving others. Keep us safe from ourselves and from the devil. For you're in charge and you can do anything you want. You are ablaze in beauty. Yes, yes, yes. So that's from a paraphrase, just to kind of give you maybe a little bit different angle. And in that, I think the worst line that he gives is, give us 3 square meals. Because I don't think that that's completely Jesus' point. If I'm starting to think about asking for bread, I realize at least 3 things really quickly off the bat. First, I rarely preach to a group that struggles to get food to eat. I'm guessing, and it's an assumption I'm making, but I assume most of you are going to be able to have lunch this afternoon. That's pretty much a given. Maybe not everybody, but most of us. And so rarely do I preach to someone who is struggling just for daily bread. But the second thing is I learned to pray, probably like many of you, at the dinner table. When the guy at the head of the table would point to one of his kids and he'd say, it's your turn to bless the meal. And my guess is most of us learned how to either pray at the dinner table or how to pray at bedtime. And that's where we learned how to talk with God, and we learned how to maybe use the right words, and how to have this conversation, and how to be grateful for what's before us. But we learned praying, in a sense, for bread. Okay, the third thing that I think jumps out is that it is spiritual to pray about the physical. Okay, let me say that again. It is spiritual to pray about the physical. Now, we could take this in any number of ways. The way Jesus is going to take it is in regard to needing food to survive. But I think we could say that the physical things in life do matter. And there are moments when those physical things in life that are out of whack or are not going the way they should, that this example of prayer is us going to the Father saying, something is off and can you please help us in the midst of it? And maybe it's health, or maybe it's jobs, or maybe it's family, and certainly there's some spiritual implications in some of that stuff, but those are physical things, and I think it's perfectly 100% correct that we take those things to God. And when we need food, I think we ought to take that to God. So, give us bread is part of God's kingdom agenda. That if God is saying, here's what I want in the world, and he started it off saying, I want my name to be hallowed, and then I want my will to be done as earth is as it is in heaven, and now he's going to say, and here's what we need. We need this petition for bread. We need to recognize that our physical being matters. This request recognizes the frailty of a human system. Okay, I've never done a prolonged fast. Like many of you, we've done it for a week, and we've done it as a church before. And maybe we've done it for 3 days or 5 days. I know some in this group have gone even 2 weeks on a fast. I have a friend that decided he would do 40 days. If Jesus could do 40 days in the wilderness, then he could do 40 days. And my line to him was, yeah, but Jesus was the Son of God, and you're not. And you like chocolate. But we won't talk about the chocolate part of it. But he kind of got about 3/4 of the way through that fast, and he calls me, and he says, man, I'm really struggling because I'm realizing that the body, it needs food, that the body is frail. And the body does not sustain itself. It's got to be provided for. But I think when I pray, give us this day our daily bread, I'm praying more for a full heart than I am for a full stomach. And I think part of what we're doing in the midst of this prayer is we're saying, God, here is the reality of life before us, and here is the reality that we need to eat. But one of the realities is I want a God who fills my heart as well as my stomach. And so I hope we'll see that by the end of this. So this idea of bread is kind of interesting throughout Scripture. you get this little story of manna. If you go all the way back to when Israel is kind of going into Canaan and they're hungry and they're whining, and so God gives them manna 6 out of 7 days. And with that manna, there is this instruction, and the instruction is you collect just enough, and if you collect more, it's going to go bad and it's going to stink. And if you don't collect enough on Friday, then you're going to be hungry on the Sabbath. But here are the rules, and you need to know, and what God will say is that this is from me. You're going into the land of milk and honey. You're going into Canaan land, but right now you're not there, and so you're getting manna from above. A phrase that'll be used often in the Old Testament, and oddly enough is used at least some in the New Testament with Jesus, is the idea of a banquet. The idea of being part of a feast, the idea of being part of sitting at a table where, obviously, if we sit at a table, there is food that is present. One of the things Jesus did when he was resurrected is you get this great scene of him fixing breakfast for the guys that are fishing. Because food matters. Now, food may matter in a different way, but I think we need to learn how to pray this prayer that give us our daily bread. So here's what I think it does. When I learn how to pray this prayer right, I think it gives me a couple of cures. So the first thing, I think it is an antidote for pride. Okay, I need to realize that what I have comes from somewhere else. Okay, last night, Nikki made a wedge salad. Yuck. No offense, sorry. She had some bacon, so that was helpful. And she had some good dress, but I'm thinking about this sermon, and I'm looking at that wedge salad, and I'm thinking, you know what? It was our jobs that bought the lettuce, and it was our jobs that brought the dressing, and it was our jobs that brought the fancy little tomato that she cut up on there, and it was our job that bought... And I just noticed right off the bat, I have this tendency to think that I've done all of this. And we need to see that it's not all about us. And we need to see that God has given and granted and blessed us in more ways than we can understand. And in reality, God is the source to meet all of our needs. I think we think we're the source to meet all of our needs. We think that we've earned this money and we've worked this job and we've tilled the land or we've done whatever it is we've done to earn this little pocketbook of change that we then can meet our needs. And that's pretty prideful. And instead, I think we need to realize that God is the one who does that. Okay, one of my favorite psalms, and it's a pretty long psalm, and we're just going to read a little piece of it, but it's Psalm 104. And just listen to what the writer of this psalm says. So it's very much praising God. He makes springs pour water into the ravines, and it flows between the mountains. They give water to all the beasts of the field, and the wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the sky nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. So you envision this river that's running through the land. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers, so clouds. The land is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for the people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth. And then notice this last verse. Wine that gladdens human hearts, oils that makes their faces shine, and bread that sustains their hearts. And I think what the psalmist is saying is he's looking out at Israel in this form of a song, and he's saying, look at what our God does. Our God not only cares about us that he gets to in that last verse, but I mean, he's getting the water into the rivers, and he's getting the critters fed, and certainly he's taking care of us, and he's giving us the bread, the psalmist says, the bread that sustains our hearts. Okay, one of my favorite miracle stories is the story of John chapter 6. And in John chapter 6, Jesus has been teaching, and now it's time to eat, and everybody is there, and there's 5,000 men. So who knows how many there really are. If there's 5,000 men, you would assume at least some of those guys brought wives and children and stuff. And so you can imagine this pretty great scene on this hill as Jesus has been preaching and teaching. And what he does is he gives thanks before he feeds them. And I think that's probably the model of why we give thanks before we eat our meal, is because we watch Jesus do it. But in the midst of that, his point is this is going to come from God, because there's not enough bread in the kids' lunch to be able to feed this mass amount of people. But God's going to provide, and God is going to sustain them. See, the danger is we seem to be tempted to forget that God and ourselves are not equal in this equation. We kind of think we carry the brunt of that load. We kind of think we're bringing everything into it, and so we need to be reminded that God is the giver of all blessings. So it's an antidote to pride. But the second thing is it's an antidote to selfishness. I love the fact that Jesus says, give us. Okay, the purpose of prayer, and we've talked about this a little bit already, so we're not going to spend much time on it, but the purpose of prayer is never to make us more self-centered. Now again, I'm not saying that you can't ask for things, and I'm not saying that you can't say, God, I'm really struggling with this, and do things in the first person. But notice here, Jesus puts it in the second person. In James chapter 4, James writes this. He says, when you ask, you do not receive, because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. This idea of give us this day our daily bread, this give us is an antidote to selfishness, because what we're doing is we're praying about food, but we're remembering that God has other children in the midst of that. And instead of not getting what we ask for because we're doing it with a selfish motive, God is saying, here's what I want you to do. I want you to include a whole bunch of others in this prayer as well. So we need to have a burden for those who are in need. That if we're going to pray this prayer rightly, I'm not just praying this prayer for myself who's got an icebox full of food. I'm praying, sorry, you don't know what an icebox is because you don't live in Utah. A refrigerator is what you people call it. I'm praying for the one who doesn't. I'm praying for the guy that's on the corner that legitimately doesn't have any food to eat on a Sunday because the kitchen is closed. And I'm praying for the family at the end of the month who had food stamps that ran all the way until they ran out. And suddenly they've got 5 days left in the month and all they've got in a cupboard is a few vegetables. And I'm praying for the senior citizens that can't put a lunch together. And so agencies come in and they'll make them lunch and bring it to them. And I'm praying for those people who need just a simple meal to be sustained. And that takes it off of me. That takes the focus off of God. Here's what I want for my life, and here's what I think you should give me. And I go from being self-centered to selfless. Again, going back to James, we'll go back a couple of chapters, and he writes to chapter 2 this. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and without daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? So let's just pause there. My guess is you got some in church who are coming in without much clothing and without much food, and they're saying, we're going to pray over you. You go. In the same way, faith by itself, if it's not accompanied by action, is dead. So James is saying to his audience, he's saying, you've got this tendency to sit there and see that they've got a need, and you might even pray about it. But what have you done about it? Again, if our prayer is, give us this day our daily bread, I think we need to be involved, if we're his people, in helping those who need a little bit of that daily bread. The third thing is I think it's an antidote for worry. Jesus doesn't say, give us this month's worth of bread. He doesn't say, give me 2026's amount of bread. He says, give me what I need today. See, I think Jesus assumes that they'll be praying something along this line every day, that they'll be asking God for the things that are needed to survive. But does your life ever become worry central? I mean, mine does. Maybe it's not as bad as it used to be, but there are still moments at 3 o'clock in the morning I start to think about the stuff that I worry about. And sometimes it's physical stuff. Now, it's not food, but sometimes it's physical stuff. And so in the midst of that, I think about, well, what's going to come next week and what's going to come next month and how are we going to figure this out 5 years from now, instead of living a day-to-day life that says, trust in God for what he's going to give you. And what I often do, and I hope God will correct me gently in this, is I often have this tendency to try to use prayer to order the future. God, here's what I want right now, or here's what I need right now, and here's what I want in a couple of years, and here's what I want 8 years from now, and here's where I want to be, and here's what I want to do, instead of just thinking about today and then having enough faith to step into tomorrow. If I could think of one of the things that we need to hear the most in the church that we live in, it's this point. It is, as we get so consumed about all the stuff that might happen or that could happen or maybe that even will happen, that we lose sight of the what's right here and what's right now. Whether it's the joy of it or, as in this case, the needs of it. See, I don't think God wants to hear us beg. Not that he doesn't mind if we beg, but what I think he wants to hear is that we depend on him. That we realize and we know it's coming from him and he is going to provide. Okay, we use that illustration of the manna. He illustrated that with Israel in the manna. Every day, except on the Sabbath, on Saturday, every day the manna would show up in the morning. And you would go out and get it. And my guess is, kind of reading between the lines, the first Saturday when it doesn't come and everybody goes out to get it, they're kind of a little ticked off. And he probably has to give a little bit of a lesson saying, I told you. But it was this reminder, here's what I'm giving you for today. You don't need more and you don't need less. Here's what you need. Okay, later on in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is going to say this in Matthew chapter 6. Don't worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all of these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Interesting. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. That it's interesting coming out of the Lord's Prayer and into a section on worry that he's going to get to pretty quick after dealing with the Lord's Prayer. He's going to say, here's what matters the most. You seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and God will take care of the rest. So it's an antidote for worry. And then the last thing is, it's, I believe, an antidote for materialism. It's daily bread. Jesus doesn't say, give me my daily ribeye, or give me my daily piece of fried chicken. He says, give me the basics. Okay, we live, I don't know if it's the most materialistic culture in the world, but it's got to be close. And the shiny of new is on every billboard. It's on every commercial. Probably in our parking lot. Jesus doesn't say, give us the best of the best. Jesus doesn't say, give us 10 of what we only need one of. Jesus says, give me daily bread. Give us. Paul says this in Philippians 4. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content. What a word. Stop there for a second. Anybody in here wrestle with being content? Don't raise your hand, because we probably all have to be guilty at moments. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstance. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Okay, before I married Nikki, I was pretty poor. I was pretty poor after I married Nikki for a while. But I was pretty poor, and I learned that you could make hamburger helper without the helper. Some of you have been there, right? I probably didn't need the hamburger. Paul says, I know what it's like to be in need. It's Paul saying, I know what it's like when I got hamburger and there's no helper to go with it. And I know what it's like when I've got the hamburger and the helper. But I've learned to be content. I wish we could all get there. Not only do I wish we could figure out where everything comes from, that it comes from God, and not only do I wish we would figure out not to worry and obsess about those kind of things, but I wish we would see what we got and say, you know what, this is all right. But that's not the way the world works. But if my memory is right, the way the world works and the way God works don't always line up. And so I need to learn to be content. Paul would tell Timothy this in 1 Timothy chapter 6. He would say, but if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. Okay, years ago, I heard a sociologist by the name of Marva Dawn. At that point, she was speaking to a bunch of preachers, and she came in to speak to all these preachers to say, okay, here is the world that we live in. And she did it from a sociology perspective. And she, again, one of the leading sociologists in the world. And so she comes to this group of about 100 of us preachers and starts talking about where the rest of the world is. And in the midst of that, she says, I have 7 shirts and I have 5 pairs of pants. We kind of wondered why she had 7 and 5, but that doesn't really matter. And when I get a new shirt, I make sure I give the old shirt away. Because why do I need more than 7 shirts and 5 pairs of pants? So all the men are looking at their wives saying, and our closets are just as full, guys. Paul says, if we have food and clothing, we're going to be happy with that. I'm not saying that having 10 shirts is a bad thing. And I'm not saying that having 2 sets of shoes is a bad thing. And I'm not saying that if the stuff that we have is going to take us to hell. But what I am saying is, let's learn to be content. Let's quit feeding into what the world says, that you need this and you need this and you need this. And I'll be honest, it may not catch me on clothes, but it catches me on other stuff. And let's just make sure we're happy with what God has given us. There's a prayer that we see at the end of the book, but the middle of Proverbs chapter 30. And the prayer goes like this: 2 things I ask of you. So here's the prayer. Do not refuse me before I die. So the first one, keep falsehood and lies from me. The second one, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I might have too much. I might have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor, so have too little, and steal, and so dishonor the name of my God. I think it's interesting that the writer of that little proverb, and that part is not Solomon, but the writer of that little section is going to say, God, here's what I want you to do. Give me these 2 things. And one of them is, don't give me too much and don't give me too little. Because either way, I could go the wrong direction. See, the biblical definition of poverty is not having a car 15 years old. The biblical definition of poverty is not living in a house that costs less than $50,000. The biblical definition of poverty is that you don't have enough to eat that day. And so let's learn a lesson. And let's be content with all that God has done. Okay, I have found that the gospel works better in the mission field than it does in the suburbs. Okay, here's why. If we packed up 20 of you and sent you to Brazil, here's what you would see. You would see this beautiful town that sits right on the coast of the ocean, and the first 2 streets would be spectacular. And it would look like you were in Malibu. And there would be big, giant hotels, and there would be golf courses, and there would be fancy restaurants, and there would be every kind of fancy shop where you can buy clothes and purses and jewelry, and it'd be all along that stretch. And you could go 3 straights in, and you'd be in Shantytown, where they're hoping they have enough food for the day for their family, where they're hoping their cardboard box will be strong enough to last them through the rainy season, where they're hoping they might see kind of blown up on the shore maybe a bigger piece of wood or find a piece of plywood that's been discarded or find something that could make their life just a little bit better. There's a reason why the gospel works better in the mission field. See, what happens is those people realize that they're getting everything from God. And whether they have a bunch or a little, God is at least part of that. And when you can come in and bring God into that equation and say, here's how God cares for you and here's how God loves you, they don't see it in some big giant house and some fancy car, and they don't see it in the fact that you get to have meat every day when you eat. They see it in the fact that they've got enough food in their hand that they can put some in their kids' hands, and that came from God, and they're more grateful than we ever are in the midst of a feast. I wish we could learn a lesson from them. I guess the bottom line is not that I, in particular, need to be asking God for daily bread, but I think I do need to be asking God for me to be a better steward of the bread I have. And now I'm speaking about more than just a loaf of Wonder Bread. Okay, if God has given us so much, then maybe we ought to be aware of that. And not only ought we to be grateful for all that he's bestowed on us, but we better be willing to see that when there's a need somewhere else, that we take care of it. And that we honor the gifts God has given us to be worked through us to the rest of the world. But there's one more point I want to get to. And we're going to talk more about this in a few weeks. But Jesus is going to say, in the Gospel of John, he's going to say, I am what? You say it. The bread of life. Okay, that's the bread that matters the most. Okay, the bread that fills my belly, that's important. I got to have that to live to go the next day. But I've got to have that to live for eternity. And if Jesus is going to say bread matters in a physical way, then certainly bread matters in a spiritual way. And if Jesus is going to say, here's who I am what sustains you. If the bread sustains the physical, then Jesus sustains the spiritual. And let's trust in that. Not in ourselves, not in what we've accomplished, not in all the things that we can line up and say, this is what I've done, but to trust in the one who says, I sustain you, not only physically, but I sustain you every other way too. And let's put our faith in that. So maybe you haven't put your faith there. Okay, our call always is that you'll get your life right with God. And if there's changes you need to make in your own life, we're here to help. If there's something you need to do to get things right with you and God or with you and someone else, we're always here to try to help facilitate that. Maybe you just need to start this journey with God and be baptized. We want to celebrate that. And we want to joyously watch you accept the bread of life and the bread that matters more than anything else. So if you need us, let us know. Kent, let's stand and let's sing.